Okay, all right, bye. Bye.
My son just broke his leg.
And my second son has a dislocated kneecap who's getting surgery soon.
Oh, my position.
Put him in a bubble.
I'm like, you know, really?
I managed to get.
No, that's, that one I'm hoping is good. That's the first out of the three. So one's got a dislocated knee with surgery coming now, but their last one is broken. So now you've cursed me, Dan. You better that Scottish one now, better not. If I get a text from him going, Mom, I'm gonna be like, Mom. Two out of three, right?
Folks, we're about 5 minutes after start time, so I don't wanna take too much longer getting ready. You could expedite. Actually, we're gonna get going. Don't take your time getting food, but got a few things to get through today. So we're called to order 20 minutes after. Does anybody have any late additions to the agenda before we get started? Nobody online? Okay.
So I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Christopher Schott. I'm an undergraduate. I'm the liaison for the USA.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Anybody have anything before we get started? No, okay.
We got roll.
Yep. I'm not even bothered with roll. Okay. Just discussions. Approval of minutes. Does anybody have anything on the minutes that they'd like to see changed?
I make a motion to approve.
It's been a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Is there anybody who objects to approving the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Business of the day. Carrie, you had a couple things for us. You want to get us started?
Yeah, sure. Can you guys hear me okay? Yes?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay. All right. So for starters, okay, well, as you all know, I think you all know, the university recently revised the academic calendar. And there was a lot of emphasis on student mental health and making sure that there were well-timed breaks in the semester, particularly in the spring semester. And I wanted to raise this item because I have the same concerns for the staff. It's been raised by my constituents. And, you know, basically in the spring semester, you know, March, April, May, they're so hectic. And while I certainly appreciate we have a great winter break and we have Martin Luther King Day off, but those months between Martin Luther King Day and Memorial Day are just, it's a real drought, I think, for the staff in terms of getting a break. We're all doing more with less, it seems, lately. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, especially because my division, I think it's exacerbated by the fact that we do have graduation on Memorial Day weekend, and the university, which I can totally understand, decided to keep it that way. But those of us, and my division is one of them, that many of us work that weekend. We actually don't even get a full weekend. so many of us work Saturday and Sunday. And so, you know, for my division, and I'm sure many others, it's a really long stretch from January to July. And I say that knowing that we all earn vacation days so we can use them. But with the pace and the hecticness of the semester, it is hard to work in a break, a personal break, knowing that you have all these projects going on and working that in that they won't be impacted. And I just feel that breaks are the best when everyone's taking them, because you don't feel like you have to check in and make sure nothing's going wrong. you know that when you know that everyone else is off too, it's a load off. And so that's sort of my opening feel. But the previous calendar committee, several years back, when they made their recommendations, as far as I can tell, they recommended two additional staff holidays in the spring semester, Martin Luther King Day and President's Day. Now, at the time, February break was pinned to President's Day. And so that made a lot of sense. And this new calendar is not really pinned to anything in particular. It's not pinned to President's Day anymore, the February break. It's not pinned to Easter or the school breaks. And I can understand all that rationale. But I wonder if there's a chance through committees or otherwise to open a conversation with the administration about the need to give our staff a break in the spring. So I would definitely, if there's anyone that was on that committee, the most recent one that has any input, I'd love to hear your perspective, or just really anyone, to see if we can maybe open a conversation.
Great. Anybody?
For the personnel committee, we had a constituent write a letter about the same issue. So when we proposed it to the human resources group, they did say that because we had personal days and, you know, it wasn't a set day like you say, Carrie, but it was, they suggested that's why we have the personal days and the vacation days to do that. But I'd fight for it. Fight for anything.
I would love that. I mean, at least to raise the conversation again, I do really feel, and I don't know, maybe I'm the only one, but when I know that everybody's off, and it's not a work day for anyone else, generally, I mean, I know there's always essential personnel, and sometimes I actually have to work on a holiday, so I understand that, but it to me makes a big difference. It's a mental break versus checking your email on your phone, and some people are good about that and really just turning it off. But I think that more and more, a lot of us are not, and we maybe are in divisions or have supervisors that email us even when we're off, and it's a mental, you know, there's a weight on that. So anyway,
Imani, did you have something?
Yes. So I was on the committee, the recent academic calendar committee. And right now, off the top of my head, I don't, there are parts that I don't remember all of it. But what I do know is that part of the spacing of the breaks was a consideration was made not only to students, but staff, for the simple fact is that there was this big gap between February break and spring break, and then after spring break to commencement. So the look wasn't only, it wasn't only looked at kind of impact on students, but also staff as well, because when the students are not here, the pace of the university tends to go down a bit, quite a bit. And so looking at how does that have an impact on staff to go straight through. To be honest, I don't necessarily know if the connection of past February breaks and what holiday is that for? Is that
President's Day?
Yeah, that association was brought up or looked at, to be honest, in that respect. But I do know that in terms of looking at the move of February break and spring break, it wasn't just looking at student impact. It was also looking at staff and faculty impact. Because of that long gap that occurs between the original February break and spring break. But I have to go back and to also kind of look at my notes from the academic calendar committee, because it's been a while since we had those conversations. And the other thing, I guess I would just say that for now. But I don't think that the connection between the February break and President's Day was brought up in that sense. There are staff who do work during that time. I do want to also point that out. So not all staff have off necessarily during that time. I think the part where all staff tends to have off is during, for the most part, the shutdown. But I guess I do want to say is that impact wasn't just looked at in terms of student staff and faculty was also looked at as well.
Right. No, I appreciate that, Imani. And I could see there was a lot of different conversation as far as what I read in the report. I think for the February break this time around, the consensus was just that it was too soon after classes started. And so it made sense academically to move that break. And I totally understand it. I was just saying there's not unlike the previous committee, when they first established that February break and they pinned it to President's Day, there was an obvious, you know, well, it's a national holiday anyway. And so I could see why they made that recommendation. There's not a clear winner if you were to say when should there be an additional staff. But I still think it's worth looking at, you know, for example, if it were the Friday of spring break, for example, when the students and faculty are already off. I have no idea what the best response is, but I feel like the fact that our graduation falls on one of our key holidays in the spring, and people do have to work, it just exacerbates it for me. And so, you know, and I do understand that not everybody does get those days off. But I think for the bulk of the staff that have that drought, it would be nice to consider something. So anyway.
Carrie, so one of the things you're trying to ask for is a break that is paid for that we don't take our vacations for.
A break, a staff holiday that, yes, a staff holiday, much like we get Martin Luther King Day now or whatever day.
Because I know this is part of a discussion. So what are you looking for as in number of days? Are you looking at like just one day break?
Yeah, just one day. In the middle of, you know, we have Martin Luther King Day, and I mean, if somebody wants to give us more days than that, who would complain, right? But, you know, I've sort of done a little competitive analysis at the different universities, and they handle it differently, some of them. But yeah, I mean, I'm just seeing that the staff, my constituents, for sure, are just, it's a real long period of time to go without a break, and the stress level, the mood, is all impacted, and so that's all I'm saying. I don't have a proposal per se. It's just sort of, I just wondered if anyone has ever, you know, come to any of you guys with some of those concerns about breaks in the semester and what you think.
Because one of the things that I think that happens, Sue, is that when you're looking at the personal time, that's very well defined in the manual. You know, what it is, what to take. I'm just wondering if one of the things that we should be asking for is to relax that definition of what you can take personal time for so that you can use that personal time to have your break.
My sense from what Carrie was saying was the fact that everyone else is still working, you're still going to get emails, you're still going to carry that, like, other people are now taking up my slack and kind of doing, rather than we're all off today, I don't have to check email, I don't have to worry that I've just dumped work on my coworker.
I think that's more of a conditioning. Because trust me, when I'm off, I don't answer nothing.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a cultural thing, too. Bruce, you had something?
I'd like to say that during February break and spring break, you know, the faculty have it off. Mm-hmm. The hallways are quieter, but the workloads on staff do not go down at all. It's just, you know, it's quieter, that's all. But the work does not go away. And personal days, you know, if faculty member is sick, they just don't show up.
You too.
You know, so they're fine. But if you're sick, you know, you get one day a month to plan whatever. And it is a long time between February and May. And the spring semester tends to be the busiest semester in planning. It's that semester, and you're also planning for the next academic year. And you're also planning to work during the summer when faculty disappear.
Yeah.
So I was in favor of it.
So, does anybody else have anything?
Feels like perfect fodder for a committee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which one do you think that would be?
Does anybody want to suggest a committee to task with this?
It sounds like it's a personnel policy committee. And since Suzanne is already, you know, fielding
somewhat important comments
from our constituents on this.
Say again? Say that again?
One more time.
Who's talking?
Yeah, I didn't say anything.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
We're waiting for you to say something, Sue.
Oh, no, it'll be a fight with human resources, I can tell you that.
Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it could be written up and
it doesn't have to go.
It doesn't have to go to human resources,
right?
Yeah. We can pass it and say this is what we throw up to the president.
That actually brings up a really good other topic that we're going to have to talk about, which is we shouldn't be passing resolutions to where we have not reached out to the impacted parties and had at least tried to work with them and get some feedback. We'll talk about that more. Does anyone else have anything else on this topic?
Could I just give some historical
perspective? Sure.
Back, so again, this was in 2005 and 6, I want to say, maybe even 2004, but when I was chairing EA, this was a topic that was brought up at that point. And a long conversation about this back and forth with Mary Offerman and different HR reps at the time. And the thing that was discussed is that they would then basically take one of your personal days. You would lose your personal day, and then they would tell you, well, you're going to have it on this day. Mm-hmm. So collectively, everyone, so it's not that you're going to get an additional day, right? Because in this pool of money. So they would say, all right, if everyone agrees that they would want that, and not that it's not worth trying again, but I'm just trying to give you some perspective on how these negotiations and discussions went on. So, and the majority of employees at that time were saying, well, we would much rather have our own flexibility on when to take these days as opposed to the university telling us when. So there's that element. But then the secondary component of this is that the culture has continued to evolve since that time in terms of the digital transformation of how we do work and where we do our work. And one of the things that was suggested early on is to begin to help as an assembly establish the culture of you don't work when you're not at work and shutting your phone off and shutting your email, and to help empower people to feel as though they do have the boundary that they can set for themselves. And that is really good work for the EA to begin to, you know, empower staff, because there's two prongs to it. One is you can make policy changes, but then the other is you can make cultural changes, and you could begin to think about, you know, whatever that might be. I'm not sure, but just to have a little perspective there.
In that culture change, we should also work on not allowing people to come to work when they're sick. Just don't.
Oh yeah, that one.
Sick, please.
Now, I returned to 1,900 emails after, and I did not check my email once. So from a Friday to I came back on Tuesday, literally 1,900 messages in my inbox. So.
And that is a cultural shift, and I support that one.
But you know, to Pam's point, I think that's great. To if there have been times that I've taken a long enough vacation that at some point I was like, okay, forget this. And I just turned off my phone. And that's, you know, that's a great feeling to be sort of like disconnected. But the flip side is when you do that and the university is going on without you working, right? Even if it's just one day. Or my colleague was just saying she took extra time off after the holiday break, a couple days. And when she got back, it was just a mountain of work. And at some point you say to yourself, well, geez, it wasn't even worth it because now I'm buried with work. And so that's my only point is that sometimes, you know, I'm not trying to advocate for taking anyone's personal day away. So let's just be clear about that. But you know, in this climate, I feel like we have all been doing, I said before, more with less since the downturn several years ago. And, you know, I do wonder whether it's worth opening up again. And maybe this time it wouldn't be a matter of taking away a day, but maybe the university would just recognize that staff could use a break just like students can use a break in the spring. So
let me ask, you know, people, because it seems like the discussion here so far has been personal days. So let's say I've been here 27 years, and it used to be that back then that you had three or five personal days that you could take a year, and you could take them, no questions asked. You just say, I'm taking a personal day. Now they merged everything into your health care. So everything is merged into one.
Yeah.
They changed really, and I don't know if a lot of people enforce it, but there's only a certain amount of things that you can take personal time for. And it's really for personal business within a work day that you can't do. So for you to be able to just to say, I'm going to take a personal day, at least in my department, you actually have to put in a comment of what that is for.
Oh, wow.
So if you look at the manual, it's changed where it gives you like closing on a house or dealing with, it's stuff like that. It's none of your business. It's personal. I just want to take it off. It's not that way anymore. And I think that is where I was trying to say is they need to drop that definition so that you do have that flexibility of taking it off without repercussions of, well, you know, that's not really something that's in the manual for you to be able to take a personal day for. So that's why I was saying that to me is a little bit easier to remove than anyone, you know, than trying to get the, you know, HR or the university to give us a paid holiday on a Friday to extend our weekend.
Our unit doesn't ask for any details. If you have the time and your workload is,
yeah, you just press it.
You just submit.
From what I understand, they're simply half days, HAP, health and personal.
Yeah.
And there are 12 per year. And so there are no, it used to be 3 personal days.
Yeah.
Plus 9 sick days. Now it's just 12 health and personal, and they're blended in. And you don't need to say what they're for.
Well, what I'll do is I'll bring in the definition in stuff that is in the employee manual that does discuss it. Because we had a big topic about this through our department meetings. And it is one of those things. It's like, you know, you can have that day, but you got to justify it. Tell us why.
I think that's cultural in each separate unit or division.
I think what he's saying is there is documentation.
All I'm saying it's in black and white the way it is. The way that divisions and departments deal with it, it's their own thing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying get rid of that so that there is no, it's straight across the board. You don't have to deal with that.
This to me feels like two separate proposals here. Like get rid of that and push for
it is. That's why with the personal policies committee, they can address both at the same time, you know, and try to deal with it that way.
There you go. Personnel policy committee. Sue, you ready?
Is that a motion to move?
I motion to close this up and give it to Sue.
Thanks.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Sure, any dissent to passing this along to the personal policy committee? And I'm on that committee, so I'll help you, Sue.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. I see none, so let's go ahead and make that so.
Okay. Should I just move on to my other one?
Please do.
Okay. So one of my constituents actually just last week asked if the EA has anything to do with health benefits. And I said, well, I mean, we don't set health benefits, but I can certainly ask any questions that you have or, you know, raise any issues. And she had was asking specifically about telehealth benefits. Apparently she, you know, for whatever reason, sinus infections, I think it was, but needs a prescription occasionally and was wondering if she could do a phone-a-doc sort of thing to get that. And because that exists, apparently. I never even thought about it. But when she Googled it for Aetna, it turns out they do offer a service, telehealth service. It's called TeleDoc. But when she put in her her ID number, it said, you don't have this benefit on your plan. And so I just wanted to raise that because it, and I don't know if we have a benefits, what committee does benefits or works with HR on benefits? I'm not really sure.
So I think probably first step with that is to reach out to like Gordon Berger to see what our current policies is. I'm not going to say that because I don't know. Gordon Berger is probably the right person to find out whether that is within our current coverage,
right.
And if it is, why we're what the technical problem is that's blocking
right.
us from getting
okay.
to it.
Because you know something like
and if
that,
it's not, then we address that as a problem.
Yeah, for anybody that's not familiar with it, it's basically like there are some basic things that you can avoid having to go to the doctor, to the actual physical doctor's office, and you can. It's like a 24/7 service. That you can call and get prescriptions, although it's, you know, controlled substances aren't available. But so your basic amoxicillin or whatever, you have an opportunity to skip the doctor's office. And so, you know, once again, I was just thinking if there's a chance that we actually have this benefit and we just don't know how to get to it, then that would be good to know. Or, you know, if it's something that the university would be willing to consider adding, you know, especially I make weird connections in my brain, but, you know, with the transportation study that we did, we had a lot of people write in to say how, and not to harp on parking again, but that it's so hard sometimes to get back to campus if you had to leave midday and then come back and park, that all the lots are full and stuff. And so, or if there was an early morning appointment that you had to go that you were arriving at like 10 o'clock in the morning, that it's so hard to find parking that people will take a whole day off for that, burn a personal day or burn a healthcare day just because they don't want to have to go in and out of campus midday, even for something that should be quick. So it just occurred to me that if we had access to something like this, that might save people. I don't know, it just might be efficient and sort of help solve our part of our transportation issues in a different way. So I don't know.
So
any thoughts on that?
So I think what I would recommend is that someone, maybe you, Carrie, reach out to Gordon to find out if we have that in our benefits. And if we do, it might be worth working with him to, and that can be done through the exec committee, might be worth working with him or somebody from his office to come and talk to us about benefits that we do have available, including Teladoc and anything else that might be cool, interesting, and new that it, his office has to share with us, just to make sure that we're aware of what options we do have.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm happy to do it.
Anybody else have?
I just thought I would raise it, just, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that? I don't see any. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Let's start. Thank let's you. Start from there. Let me know what you find out.
Okay.
All right. That gets us through to discussion Board of Trustees meeting topics. Board of Trustees meeting topics. So we do have the Board of Trustees meeting coming up March 21st. We should not approach that meeting unprepared. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're going to talk about today is what kind of things do we want to talk to the Board of Trustees about? What kind of topics do we want to cover? How do we want to present ourselves, things that we've done? What questions do we want to ask them? So I'm just going to open up the floor to start the discussion with what information do we want to provide them? Make sure it's concise. What information do we want to gain from them? And what points do we want to start pressing on to see if we can get some support from the Board of Trustees?
So I have nothing specific other than the idea that after the downturn, we have been, since then, been expected to do more with less. The economy's on the upswing, things are in good shape. Will there be an accompanying reaction to that then, where pay may go up, hire more people? Like, what are the long-term plans to adjust to an improved economic situation in the broader world as it affects staff?
Okay, so broader plan. Long-term plans reflecting the upturn in our
right, because plans. Clearly the downswing was reflected in
yes.
the staff numbers.
There should be an accompanying reaction to an upturn too.
Anyone else? Laura?
I think it's important for us to talk about the resolutions we've been working on. You know, one, you know, two that I've been really involved with, the Transportation Task Force and the survey. I know we hammered on this last year and everybody talked to them about the importance of transportation parking. Well, those issues haven't gone away. It's something almost everybody on this campus feels strongly about one way or the other. You know, I think it's important to remind them this is an ongoing thing because they may hear about these surveys that are happening and you know, the situation hasn't been resolved, and I think it's important to bring that to their attention again. Maybe not in great detail, but, you know, I do think it's important. I think, you know, some of the other things that we're working on in committee would also be important. I mean, the Campus Welfare Committee, I'll talk about some of the things we're reviewing there, but they haven't come before the whole EA, but many of you are aware of some of the things we're working on in terms of non-exempt retirement benefits and other things. I think pointing at what we're doing to advocate for staff and you know, I don't know if we can maybe put in resolution form, despite the economic situation at the university, maybe not having as much of an uptick as the economy, you know, what's happening to retention if staff can find better offers elsewhere? I know that's an issue. Some parts of campus are losing staff like crazy because they can get a lot better pay if they go off campus. How is the Board of Trustees going to respond? I mean, you know, I guess I'm trying to think, we don't have time to draft a resolution between now and the 21st, but I guess I'm thinking, you know, we can say this is a concern of ours, but they may say, well, what have you done about it? At least if we can say we're working on resolutions, resolutions that are working their way through committees or resolutions that we've already passed.
And I hear what you're saying. I think that it would be a really good idea for each of the committees to look at what they're currently working on and what plans they have moving forward, and we're going to talk some more about that as towards the end of the meeting here. But document those and send them out so that we have an idea of what topics you're currently working on, what things you've had successful and recently, so that we can compile that list for this conversation. And it also helps the rest of the body be a little bit more aware of what the committees are doing, where they're at, where they're going.
So I just wanted to bring up a point that was previously talked about, well, the economy's doing better and isn't Cornell doing better? So Sue and I are both within the Division of Financial Affairs, and well, we recently went to a presentation that our EVP made where she talked about the financials. And so Cornell is not in the kind of wonderful shape that one might suspect it is. And I throw that out there just as a warning that the Board of Trustees is probably very well aware of what the financial picture looks like. So I like Laura's point about the fact that if folks are leaving here because they're getting better offers elsewhere, and that correlates to, you know, the lack of a good SIP, just keep in mind that behind that are the financials of the university, which aren't as fabulous as we would hope they could be.
Anyone else?
Well, I would just, you know, the financial upturn hasn't been felt in the endowment payout last year. This year coming up, from what I'm told, is going to be another downward spiral in the next year. So I guess my question would be, you know, when do we get to catch up to where we were 2 years ago? Because I'm retiring in 2 years, and I'd like to make a projection for my department, which is endowment money bound. I'd like to make a projection of, well, in the next 3 or 4 years, this is the kind of things I project. Endowment payouts go down, salaries go up. That's not a good formula.
Yeah.
And so if we can have any kind of, you know, like last year, we were told that the endowment payout was going down 6%. We were told for this coming year, this next year, that the endowment payout was going to go down by about 1.5%. The endowment is going down, payout is going down almost 4%. So it's like every year, last year and this next year, we're losing ground at the same time that our expenses are rising. So when does it go up?
So what I would suggest is that we think about that and how do we bring that to the Board of Trustees without sounding like, when are we getting our money?
Yeah.
I think it's a valid question. But I think we need to think about approach as well. Mm-hmm. How do we approach the question from a positive framing on and with some informational backing? We want to look at what has this upturn looked like for the university, and we can get that information pretty quickly, I think. And based on this data that we have, in what ways are we going to see that as employees impact us?
Just simply departments and units would like to make, say, a four-year projection.
Yep.
Do they have any guess about what their projections are?
Tuition goes up 3.75%. You know, something's going on.
You had something?
I just wanted to mention sort of another angle at this problem is the way that the budget model has switched up. If you've got your units funding SIP rather than that coming from a central pool, it makes it tougher and tougher for the units because now they got to come up with this money. And their biggest expense is salary pools. So the employee is taking more work, and now in order to get the raise that the university says is available, your unit has to find a way to cut their budget to provide that SIP. So that's just another way that the money is being played with that impacts the employee in a negative way. I don't know of any.
They're not filling positions. I mean, it's still a budget line, you know, so the money's still there for, you know, for salary. They just don't fill the positions and kind of start padding for these type of things.
So who wants to take responsibility for drafting that up, and at least initially, so that folks can get a look at it and we can start refining that into a question for trustees?
While you're on this topic, Remember that President Pollack will be at the next meeting on the 28th.
Yep.
So discussion points. I don't know if there's overlap, but if you want
to. I think there certainly will be. That's a good reminder. We will have access to President Pollack and VP Opperman.
Yes. And they ask that we forward on topics so that they can come prepared to be responsive to whatever it is that you'll be discussing in that. So if you,
right.
Similar strategy is what you're using for the DOT.
So expanding the question, President VP Opperman are also going to be with us our next meeting. We should be thinking about questions for them as well. And I assume that there actually is quite a lot of crossover between these two sets of questions. What I would like to see is the folks that are making proposals for these topics document them and send them out to the list so that we can collectively kind of talk about them and start refining those. So we have a kind of a united front when we start speaking to both the president and VP and the trustees. I will be setting a deadline of this Friday for questions for the VP and president, because I want to rewrite them into a single document and present those ahead of time. So please, folks, don't leave me doing it all. Go ahead, Carrie.
Just wanted to mention what we discussed in exec today, which was there were a lot of open questions from the staff from the president's address to staff back in October, and there was an effort by VP Opperman to answer some of those questions, and I believe Jeremy is going to reach out to her about the status of that, but if nothing else, we have a lot of questions that didn't get answered from the staff directly. And I can provide that list. There's a pretty long list. So
yeah.
We only got like a couple questions answered at that event. So there were a lot of question marks.
Yeah. And that is on my to-do list. I will be reaching out to Mary ahead of time to see if we can get an update on that.
And this is just confirming that's March 28th.
March
for the Opperman. Yes, it is.
Okay. April 18th.
It was moved, I guess, last week.
Yes.
So we're meeting the BOT before we meet with Opperman and Pollack. So,
yes.
And one thing I recommend, I've always found it useful, is especially for those that are new and haven't met with the Board of Trustees yet, is possibly going to the website of the BOT, that we have the committees that they are responsible for, their roles, their responsibilities, because some of it might not be applicable to them. So if we know, the more you become familiar with what they actually are doing, then it's much better for us when we approach them that day. So I highly recommend you guys look at that, please.
And just confirming the time for the discussion with DOT on March 21st.
That's from 3 to 4, Pam, you said? Gina said that? 3 to 4, and I don't have the details in the room, but typically that's in one of the banquet, in the rooms in Banffy, so you know, like a row or something.
Yeah, I've got it as row room in Statler. All right. Anyone else? Topics either for the president or for trustees. If you think of something after this, I'm going to ask you to please send an email to the list. If you don't feel comfortable sending the list, you can send it directly to me, but I'd prefer you just send it to the list so that we can all kind of see what people are thinking about, and because it might spark thoughts for somebody else as well. Often does. Go ahead.
I just have a question, and I'm not sure. I know that certain committees have worked on this particular issue, but it's of utmost concern within the context of some of the initiatives that we're doing on diversity and inclusion. Is there any particular committee or subcommittee of the EA that focuses on issues of diversity and inclusion as a rule? Or do they just pick up certain things? I mean, I know that you've picked up certain things as it relates to web accessibility that we're certainly continuing to talk about, but I'm talking about overall issues of diversity and inclusion.
Historically, the Welfare Committee has handled those.
Historically, the Welfare Committee
has handled those.
But there's been no like immediate resolutions in the last year or two related to that that I'm aware of that I was able to look up
regarding diversity.
I'm pretty sure there's been a couple. I don't have it off the top of my head, but
I can do more research.
Sure, and I can dig a little bit after the fact here too, and I'll see what I can find in.
Because I think, again, just with some of the other aspects of climate that are happening right now and some other initiatives that are happening, that could be a topic to continue to bring up to the Board of Trustees as well.
And I can't imagine how that won't be at least part of the conversations we have. So, yeah.
Oh, so it is a planned topic of consideration?
For me personally, I can't imagine how we can't have some kind of conversation with leadership about campus climate and ongoing issues, because it is such a current, present, relevant issue.
Right. I'm thinking specifically it relates to EA and our employees, as opposed to the campus climate issues that we've seen that related to issues of the resolution that you had brought forward. I'm talking specifically about our employees and the employee aspect of that.
Certainly, and if you have something that you would specifically like added, I would be more than happy to.
Okay.
On that.
And let me just interject here as the chair of the Welfare Committee. If you want to draft a resolution, feel free, and we could discuss it in committee and run with it. There's no one person in charge of drafting resolutions.
No.
It's all on all of us, if we feel strongly about something, to try to get together with some co-sponsors and get the ball rolling. And sometimes it takes a while to get things going, and we're running out of time in this legislative year, but I think it's really important to talk about these issues in a variety of different ways.
And we'll talk about, we're certainly going to talk a little bit more about what we have planned for the rest of the semester here. Pretty quick.
And we've had resolutions. If you look at all of them, whether they are one specifically commitment to LGBTQ inclusion, support for foreign nationals, we've been more than happy to clearly, obviously, push forward a support to a specific unit. And then if we're looking at diversity, as Laura said, I would encourage that you kind of connect with the current committees that we do have active.
Okay.
Come up with wording, whether that is a recommendation moving forward that perhaps the Employee Assembly should have a diversity committee, then that could be discussed and looked at through that path as we move.
Okay, sounds good.
Anybody else? Okay. Then I'm going to ask folks to submit their, it doesn't have to be formalized, but submit their ideas to the list so that we can start boiling them down into something a little more concise so that we're all on the same page. I will take anything that's shared there, put them into a single document, share them back again once we've kind of hashed through them a little bit. I want to have that done by Friday for the president. And probably Board of Trustees as well. We might as well just really, as long as we're working on the topic.
Who's been to one of these before? I haven't been to one.
I've been to a couple.
Are they pretty open and giving their responses?
Yeah.
They actually are.
So maybe one of the questions that we should be asking is, what's your climate on a smoke-free campus? I'd like to know what their climate is. Why not? They're the ones that's going to make the vote and make that decision. I know we're getting ready to put it out, right?
So definitely put that one up there so we have that added to the list.
I find them insanely engaging, open, and they remember. I mean, they will go back. If there's something that you get them to connect to or to click onto and you're well prepared, you've got the backup data information as to why you're bringing it up. I mean, if you're just pulling that thin air, but if you're coming in there because it's been discussed, because we have data, we have asked proper questions, they're more than happy to continue with it.
Because they visit or have meet with each assembly, don't they?
Yes.
Yes, all of them. Okay.
Yeah, because I wanted him, our student liaison, to be here because I know they were bringing that question up.
That's not good.
To him too, and it'd be interesting to see.
I have the info on that. Okay. So I'm on the UA Welfare Committee. So there's going to be an email that goes out on March 27th. It's going to, in the email, it's going to be the question being asked. I haven't seen the question being asked, but there will be. Then I'll just read what we had said. Then there will be town hall forums with Cornell Health. They'll have links in the Cornell Sun. It'll ask for a forum on April 2nd, and a forum on April 9th. The promotional period will be April 9th through April 16th, and the voting will be April 17th, 18th, 19th. Of April. It says the final vote will show the popular vote overall and the breakdown of vote for each constituency, undergrad, grad professional, employee, faculty. The talk was, you know, not to go by just what the total popular vote was, but faculty as a vote would be like one piece. Staff would be one piece, undergraduate. So if there were 2,000 undergrad voting and 200 staff, it has an equal weight, like Congress, mm-hmm. not like the Senate. Or not like the Senate, I'm sorry.
Great.
So it's coming.
Yep. Does anyone else have anything for topics? Okay. Great, we're running a bit up on time too, so I think move along to talk about committees and finalizing outstanding issues. Probably want to talk a bit about committee expectations and some of the conversations we've had recently with VP Opperman and with administration. So what I really like to be sure is that as we're talking about whose committee chairs in here? I should put that up on the side. Okay, good. One of the things that I want to make sure is that we're looking at realistic goals for the rest of the term. So what I'd like to hear from each of you is, what are you currently looking at? What do you need as far as it, you know, as the recovery? And do you think that you can accomplish them within the remaining time within this term? So you want to go?
Yeah, so, okay. So I think, Randy, you mentioned it last week or 2 weeks ago when I wasn't here. So we kind of came to the conclusion that at this point, we're not going to add or change anything to the idea of education and also the policy of, you know, of supervisors having the say of, you know, you can take classes or not. The way that we're moving forward is, one of the things that we've noticed is that a lot of staff members are not aware of benefits that are there for them when it comes to professional development and education. They're also not aware of the details of that, where to find it, and the outcome of it, and is it plausible to do it? So we've been talking, the committee, and we actually want to kind of work with Carrie on this eventually. We want to, so it involves you and the communications department, is to figure out, or committee, is to have spotlight or highlight staff members that are either, that have graduated from the EDP program,
mm-hmm.
and or currently in it. Somehow, I don't know, like on like through the EA newsletter or through our Facebook page somehow. So that's something that we want to have a discussion with the communications committee. And my then,
I just wanted to mention, Chris already did some initial work thinking about communicating just that, and he has a draft article where he interviewed a couple of participants in the degree program. So if you want to join our next committee meeting, or if you want me to join yours, that would be great.
Yeah, well, after this, I'll email you, and we can talk.
Sounds good.
Cool. And then a second component of that was, I don't know, some kind of, also talking to Carrie, is like a platform of where we can either present questions that people would have about the ADP program or the process, or a platform where staff can ask questions, and then we can, like my committee could answer, but I don't know how that would look. Mm-hmm. But that's something, just a discussion that we could have with Carrie. So so we feel that for the rest of this year, that's the most realistic thing that we could do.
Yeah, having just applied for EDP myself, I'm quite familiar with how obfuscated, particularly the financial applications.
And that's one of the things. Yeah, exactly. So
great. What's going next? Laura, you got anything?
The Employee Welfare Committee met and has, we reviewed two resolutions at our last meeting. One was Adam Howell's sustainability proposal. And he has revised that and has sent it back out to the Employee Welfare Committee members for feedback. I think it will be ready for review at the next EA meeting, at which we actually want to address resolutions, whether, you know, we want to table that till after meeting with President Pollack. That's kind of up to you guys, but I think that's very feasible to do within this legislative term. The other one that's a little bit thornier is the proposal that Bruce and Brandy and I are co-sponsoring about non-exempt retirement benefits and getting parity exempt retirement benefits. That is also being reviewed to Personnel Policy Committee. So it's been through one committee meeting at each of these two committees. At this point, we need to involve HR in a more substantive way. They are not responding to my emails. This is why I asked Bruce about whether they've been responsive to his. There is a mechanism whereby at least Lauren Jacoby and Alan Bishop will attend a Personnel Policy Committee meeting. So maybe I can talk to Sue offline and try to get them. But what do you do if you email the people who should be involved in the administration and they won't respond to your emails? Because I'm getting, you know, Gertberger had agreed to meet, and then my two follow-up emails, no response. You know, I've been copying Alan Bishop on this, no response. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hesitant to email Mary Opperman because she's got a lot to do, and it should be dealt with people underneath that level.
Proper escalation. At some point, copying in Mary isn't the worst thing, but before you hit that level, I would also include the Office of the Assemblies. Gina can often be very good about
the Office of the Assemblies on this too.
If you continue not getting responses, I'll tell you my personal track is I start making phone calls because they don't know my number and they pick up.
That's
first
a really
step.
Good idea.
And all of a sudden they start once they put their foot in it, I start getting responses. So I will tell you my first response is start making phone calls.
But you know, I really like to involve the HR folks with this.
Yeah.
I think we need to. It's
no,
really
you
come
will
on
have
us
to,
and
yeah.
they have to be part of the process, and I'm trying to incorporate them as part
of
the process.
But I do have to say is we had the executives had a meeting with her, mm-hmm. and you know, one of her comments is that, you know, they're there for you. and stuff like that. And if they don't respond,
she will be willing to take that on.
Placing it, you know, that this is our second request or whatever, then CCing her to get that. I mean, what can you do? You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're trying to get the information. And they're not providing it for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's on her because she told us that we're here for you to give you whatever you need.
We certainly don't want to go nuclear on the first go. But we want to, again, because these are folks we've been working with for a long time, we want to give every opportunity. Because oftentimes it's, you get your head down, you see an email come in and go, yeah, I'll deal with that. And then it's 3 days later. Mm-hmm. So that's why I do the phone calls first, is just to break them out of the heads down thing for a bit. But at some point, if you're not getting response and we need to move forward on something, we do absolutely have to have response from anyone who's directly impacted, particularly anybody asked to do any work on a resolution before it goes through. And that's one of the things that we've recently had conversation with, and I'll talk about a bit more if we don't run out of time.
Can I just ask, what kind of information, like what kind of response are you asking for? Are you asking for
we need to have sit down and have a conversation.
So you're inviting them to come to a meeting? Is that where you've invited them to a meeting?
No, I've said, can I meet with you one-on-one? Gordon Parker and I had tentatively set that up, and it was derailed by one of the early snowstorms. And then I've been trying to follow up and reschedule and not heard anything back, but I've been emailing.
I would contact his assistant.
I just know the sheer volume. I mean,
Donna, who's?
We can help you find, or let me know. We can help you find.
I'm terrible with names, but
I'd be glad to try to help.
Okay, great.
Yeah, anything we can do to help with that, we will try. So, Office of the Assembly is the exact. Mary, I'm certain of it.
So there's one coming up with the Welfare Committee meeting. Just got an email this morning from somebody on the Campus Climate Committee. This speaks to what Andrea brought up. They would like to meet with the Employee Welfare Committee the next time we meet. So need to try to coordinate schedules with them, but I'm really happy that they reached out. I had applied to be on that committee, but they didn't choose me as one of the people, and I think that, you know, I would like to know what they're
doing.
They've been doing, and I think that that speaks to some of the issues we've been talking about here.
Right. I know that's one of the things that's been talked about as a little more cross-assembly involvement to it. You see, we've got a liaison for the assembly.
Yes.
The UA has had quite a few conversations about breaking down some of the barriers between the assemblies and having a little more cross-functional conversation, which I think is awesome. So, great. Terry, you got anything for us?
Well, I'm mostly in, I guess, a supportive role. The communications committee doesn't have any pending resolutions or anything, but we've supported our transportation resolution. Happy to support Marjorie in however she wants to move forward. Chris, anything you want to add?
No. I had to miss
it. We've got plenty on our plate, but it doesn't involve resolutions, put it that way.
Right.
Yeah, me, the elections committee?
Yeah,
those of you that are not coming up to the end of your term would have received an email from me asking about participating in an elections info session that we are with. Collaborations with the communications committee, I'm going to be working on. The elections committee, obviously, one also normally, we could draft our solutions when we're mainly looking at changing the way of our bylaws or how we're doing the elections, but normally we work on our elections. And we have one coming up. As you all know, the elections material will be up online on the week of the 19th. The info session will be for that Thursday. An email will be going on, and we will have from 10 to 2 a good period in SAGE. We're going to have treats, we're going to have info, we're going to have people, we're going to have material, and we will be actively recruiting, walking around, and trying to get as many individuals as we can possibly get participate. That's it for elections.
And that had better be done by the end of the term.
It will be. I luckily will have that done by the end of the term. Yeah. I think we're good.
And where is it going to be at?
SAGE.
SAGE.
I'll send an email to the few that are not having to run again.
All right. Well, it sounds like we have some very much attainable goals going here. One of the things that the exec talked about this afternoon actually was a better way of keeping the body and the constituency aware of what's going on in committees. We're going to be talking about that some more, and probably with the committee chairs as well, about ways to essentially a topic list of, doesn't have to be a resolution yet, doesn't have to be anything formal yet, but just a quick bullet list of, these are the things we're currently talking about, to help folks keep a bit more informed, stay a bit more transparent as we can. So I'm going to enjoy hearing feedback on these ways to better our communication from our committees. As you saw in Craig's email after our meeting with the administration on, or particularly VP Opperman, on, God, I don't remember what day it was. One of the things that we had conversation there about was changing a bit of our perspective on how we handle resolutions. One of the things that we as the EA exec have, I think, not done as well as we could in the past is set clear expectations for our committee chairs and define how those roles should be done. And I think one of the things we can improve is setting expectations, talking ahead of time with folks that are going to be committee chairs on process and procedure, so we can kind of standardize things across the committee, so we get the same, essentially the same product out of committees across the board with the same kind of understanding and expectations. This is all stuff that's in process, and we're going to be talking to all of the committee chairs, both present and future, about ways to improve that, and it's not a short-term goal. So if you have thoughts, ideas, suggestions on improving internal processes, particularly around resolution writing committees, please make them, share them either with the exec or with the body, so that we can have some discussions around that. One of the topics that was brought up that I think I've mentioned a couple of times here that I want to be a little more explicit about is we have in general been pretty good about reaching out to impacted individuals when we write a resolution. Not in every case, but in most cases. And one of the things that we want to be sure that is happening within our committees is that one of the responsibilities for the committee chair is to ensure that all of those impacted parties have been contacted. Don't need their agreement, but they need to be aware that we're coming up with a resolution or that we're having a conversation. Because in most cases, these folks are other employees. They're our constituents as well. One of the things we want to do is start from a collaborative perspective. We're going to work with these folks to make the change that we want to see. Work with these folks to define the problem, refine the problem, and the solution. And it oftentimes requires multiple different organizations, university communications, HR, whatever, back and forth conversations. We want to make sure that that happens, though, before a resolution passes committee. So that's going to be one of the things we're looking towards in the future. As I said, most of the resolutions we've had come through have been actually very good about that thus far. But there hasn't ever been a formal set expectation of that in the past. And that's one of the main topics that I've personally been addressing based on the conversations that we've had. So does anybody have anything they'd like to?
Or on that email specifically that Craig sent out. I mean, he had several bullets on there, and I think some of them.
I think it's really important to read that. Please do.
Yes, at length, because again, not only is it just resolution writing, but it is also our role as EA members, our role within shared governance and with leadership, and then our constituents. So I think it was a good meeting for us as exec to kind of bring it back down where she basically highlighted and reiterated what we are here to do. So it was, at least I found, very interesting.
I honestly, I didn't feel that, that any of the things that, that were brought up about what we're supposed to be doing were new.
No.
But I did learn a lot.
Yeah.
And it did help me really stop and think about internal process and, and how we can help the committees do the best job that they can do. And that's kind of, I think, the primary focus.
So I have a quick comment, because when I read Craig's synopsis of your meeting, it seemed to be diametrically opposed to the way Ulysses had, had informed us, saying basically, you know, if we don't ask, we'll never get. So my sense of reading from reading Craig's is if we don't think the president will okay a resolution, we shouldn't really advance it. And I think we are here to advocate for staff, even if we're in a period of financially straitened circumstances and there's a cost associated with a resolution, if it's the right thing to do. For example, with this non-exempt retirement parity thing, I still think we ought to ask, even if we're not getting feedback from the administration about, you know, I'm concerned with that particular resolution, for example, that, you know, the fact that I haven't getting any feedback is that they really, you know, they don't want to, this is going to be a big deal if, it, if the president were to pass it. But I still think it's important for us to advocate for staff and go on record as advocating for staff, even if these resolutions don't necessarily get passed.
So I didn't read the if we think administration won't pass it, we shouldn't write a resolution. That wasn't my takeaway from the meeting we had. My takeaway from the meeting was that we should not write a resolution and pass it without having ever contacted the people who would be directly impacted by that resolution. That should never happen, and it has in the past. Not regularly, but it has happened. And we really should work.
What are you really talking about?
What was that, Sue?
With my situation, because you know that it all came from my deal.
I
communicated just to level the field, because I reached out numerous times for 2 months, and I had Laura's same deal with trying to get them to come back. But that we'll take that offline some other time.
Yeah, yeah, and and certainly there's always going to be exceptions and unique situations. That's not really the point. Though I do want to hear about that. That's not to discount anything. You're running out of time here, and I'm going to have to end really quick. But I just want to put that the process makes sense to make sure that we do reach all constituents in all cases when formalizing a written submission to the president's office.
And
before that happens,
because
that builds our reputation.
But keeping in mind quite clearly, we are not here negotiating. We cannot negotiate for staff. We can be an advisory, we can highlight, we can look at what we're seeing, what we hear from our constituents, but we cannot negotiate for staff. And I think that's a key thing we need to remember.
In resolutions, you know, what I took from the meeting was that the resolutions that we do are not the only way that we can show that we're engaging in doing them. The way that she pretty much put it was, once you put it into resolution,
we're done.
You're talking or you're communicating pretty much stops.
Yep.
Right there.
You're no longer involved.
So you could be more, or your committees could be more productive if you keep that line of communication open to help with these, you know, HRs and stuff to work towards something versus putting it in as a resolution and then saying, there you go. Because once you do that, you're done, because you're waiting for a response. And the response could be saying, thanks, but no thanks. Then
that's
we're like, yeah, you really can't go and engage them again.
No.
So once you don't do that, so just don't base
why
the work that you do.
So before we continue this conversation, we are already several minutes over. I'm going to formally end this meeting. If you wish to stay and continue the conversation, please do. But we can't force anybody to stay here anymore.
We can.
It's a great conversation, and we should continue it, but we are out of time.
And we have them coming in.
Bye, everybody.
Yes.
Bye, Carrie. Bye, guys.
Please submit your questions to the list.
Do you see the halo on her head?
On whose head?
All
my head? Oh, her. Well, yeah, but she's in Florida.